every 10 miles, I was kind of refocusing myself and thankful that I got to be there, because, you know, we can get focused on what's hurting and being down and get in that dark place, that low valley. But if we focus on the positive, and, you know, people on my podcast have heard me say this plenty of times, but I always, you know, for races, I make myself, even if I'm feeling like garbage, when I get into an aid station, I always ask them how they're doing. I always make sure I thank them for being there. And even if I don't feel good, I smile.
You're listening to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. And this is Trail Talk, where we have casual conversations with all kinds of runners. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. Whenever trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where our conversations might go. So there aren't too many topics that are off limits for us. So if you're ready, let's get started. Hello and welcome back. My guest this week is David Theriault. He has placed among the top finishers in several hundred-mile races. He's run the Grand Canyon rim to rim to rim. He's run in the Western States 100. He's also run the Tahoe 200. He has his sights set for next year on the Triple Crown of 200s, running the Tahoe 200, the Bigfoot 200, and the Moab 240 all in the same year. He is also a podcaster. His podcast is called Run the Riot Podcast. I'm glad to have my guest this week as David Theriault. So welcome, David, to the podcast, or to the show. I appreciate you being here.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, Eric.
Yeah. And what I always try to do is if you and I were to go out and run around the trail, kind of start off by saying if we hadn't run together before, what do you tell people when you're running with them on the trail? I mean, how do you talk about yourself?
So kind of give us
a little background about how you start off telling about who you are.
Man, it kind of starts off. I'm a Cajun, Louisiana Cajun living in Oklahoma. So I don't know, my Cajun Okie right now. A little bit about me, man. Just grew up in Louisiana, South Louisiana, and you'll probably hear the accent come out if with a few words and stuff. But just love living in South Louisiana. But I married an Okie girl, so now I'm in Oklahoma. Usually it comes up on, you know, how we started running, and I wasn't a runner growing up or anything. I just did wrestling and stuff in high school, and did some jujitsu after, and the only running I did was when, you know, coach made us run because we didn't win or something in high school.
It's a meme I've seen that says our sport is your sport's punishment.
Exactly. Yeah. So we'd have to do sprints or run extra miles, and yeah. And so I was just like, when I got out of high school and I was doing jujitsu, I was just running for cardio and to cut weight, you know. And I think most I probably ran like 7 miles on a Saturday, and had never did any kind of races or anything. And in December of 2009, I tore my ACL doing jujitsu, and I was kind of enjoying, you know, running a little bit and for fun. And I said, well, you know what? I need to rehab this knee. I'm going to run a marathon within a year. And never run anything. And so I started training, and my first race was the Baton Rouge Marathon, a little bit less than a year from when I had my ACL surgery. So
wow,
baptism by fire.
So was running a helpful way to rehab that?
It was, and I rehabbed smart. You know, I did what they told me. I told my PT, I said, look, if it can hurt me, I don't mind, you know, I'll take the pain. Just don't let me damage it anymore. I'll do what you want me to do. And tell, you know, when I can start running, you tell me. And so I just did that. And when I was able to start running, I didn't know what I was doing. So I started picking the brain of a local running club, and got some help and figured out how to train for a marathon, and it worked. I finished. I didn't, you know, didn't die or anything. So it was good. And I was like, man, I kind of like this running stuff. And I just kept going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'd imagine that if you ran a marathon, it was probably on road.
It was. Yeah. And I did it while I was rehabbing my knee, I read Born to Run. Okay. And so I did it in Vibram five finger shoes.
Oh my goodness.
I did all my training and, you know, kind of learning how to run correctly and ran my first marathon on a road with Vibrams. Yeah.
So did it take time for you to, adjust your, you know, get strength in your feet?
Yeah. Well, the good thing was, I guess, cause I was building from surgery, you know, and so I had to just go slow with building the miles.
You're doing limited miles to begin with anyway.
Right. Yeah. So it was a good time to progress and to do it, you know? And so, you know, as I built up and, you know, my calves were screaming at first, you know, cause the, mm-hmm. when you run kind of 4 foot, your calves absorb the shock more than your heels and your joints. It just, you know, kept doing it and just kept plugging away at it and slowly built my miles up. And yeah, I enjoyed it. I liked the feel of the road. You know, I like being able to feel what I was running on. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it was cool. And I PR'd my a couple of years later, I PR'd my half marathon in the Vibrams, but I had a stress fracture. So, that was the end of the Vibrams for me. I was like, okay, I need so something.
Do you know how you got the stress fracture? Was it too much torque or is
I guess I was pushing hard. It was a New Orleans jazz half marathon, and I was mm-hmm. pushing hard trying to PR. I was getting ready to try to do a sub 3 hour marathon, and this was a build up. And just about mile seven, I felt it, and it was kind of in my my ankle, and I could feel it. But I was running really good. The weather was good, so I just kept going, mm-hmm. and finished the race. But boy, after I limped around for a while and had to. I had to rehab that, and my dreams, my goal race kind of went out the window. So,
yeah. So then did you then use a more structured shoe after that? Was it?
Yeah, because I full disclosure, I'm on the Ultra red team. I'm an Ultra mm-hmm. ambassador. Okay. So, but I'm on the team because I wanted shoes that still let me run natural with a 4 foot, right. you know, gait that left room for my toes. And Ultra was pretty new at the time. And so I was running a relay from Baton Rouge to New Orleans. It's 126 miles and my legs were going to be like about 50 something mile. And I ended up getting the Ultra Lone Peaks and mm-hmm. I started running in some in their street shoes and it worked well. It gave me, I was able to just let me run like I wanted to run, but gave me a little cushioning under my feet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ultras are. That was kind of my first real trail shoe was the Ultras.
And yeah.
So I really like them. When did you then make the transition to trail? I mean, you said you were running some stuff on roads.
So my first trail run, it wasn't an ultra. It was in I forgot the town, but it was in central Louisiana, and it was called the Out and Back. And I signed up. I never really run a whole lot on the trails, and so I signed up for the half marathon. And man, I just loved it. I loved getting out on the trails, and I ended up placing third for it for my first little, you know, trail jaunt. And wow. And so I was just like, man, this is cool. And so I started, you know, looking for trails in South Louisiana that I could run. And my favorite trail down there is in it's Chico State Park in Ville Platte, Louisiana, and it's a 20-mile loop. And this is kind of funny. So this doesn't happen anywhere else in the world. So I would put, got in, you know, some of the online Louisiana online trail runners. There's a Mud and Guts group. And I was like, hey, I want to go run Chico. I heard it's a great loop. Anybody can tell me about it. And this one guy I had never met in person said, I'm going to be out there Saturday morning if you want to come run with me. And so we found it kind of funny. We were running the trails and I had never met the dude. And we met in the dark and just run out into the woods, you know, and yeah. You know, he's a good friend. He's a strong runner. I learned a lot from him. I was picking his brain. And my first, you know, fell in love with the trails. And then, you know, I wanted to do ultras. And so my first ultra marathon was on that trail. My first ultra marathon was a 100 miler in 2013 on that trail. We did the loop 5 times.
Okay.
And so I kind of did the same crazy thing that I did with road races and started with a marathon. I just started with
the big one. So yeah, now what was that 100 miler? Cause was it called the Screaming Monkey?
Screaming Monkey, I haven't done that one. That's up in North Louisiana, okay, up near Shreveport. And it's some good folks that put that on. I know a lot of the people that put it on, but I haven't run that one. This one was, it was called the Cajun Coyote at the time. Okay. It was actually started by some people out of state, and then it was taken over by a race director, Jeff Beck. That race no longer happens as the Cajun Coyote, but a very good friend of mine who helped me when I was training for that one, her name is Edie Cuvion. She took over that area, and now it's called the Loup-Garou, and Loup-Garou is a Cajun werewolf, and it's spelled Loup-Garou. I probably messed it up, but anyways, okay. The Loup-Garou.
The Cajun word. That's good.
yeah. It's a great race. If anybody wants to go learn about, like, eat some gumbo and some boudin and some good South Louisiana food and be taken care of and run a good race. It's, you know, it's kind of some swampy areas and all that. It's fun.
Yeah. And I was curious, you know, my impression of Southern Louisiana is, I mean, that it's lowlands and probably fairly flat. Is that accurate, or do you have some ups and downs there?
So this particular race, Mark Hammond came and ran it. I think the first or second year she did. I think the first year she did it. Mark Hammond, who's placed top 10 at Western States, he's fast. He came and run it, and he did a really fast time on it. But his comment was that it's a lot more up and down than he thought it was. But it's a lot of quick up and downs. It's really okay. A lot of roots. But it's fun because you go through kind of some swampy areas, and then you go through some piney woods, and it's just a lot of different, you know, that 20 miles, you get to mm-hmm. a lot of different little areas that are just kind of South Louisiana, different parts of South Louisiana. You get to experience in one trail. Pretty cool.
Yeah. And that's one other area of the country I've never been to, South Louisiana.
Really? Oh man, you gotta get down there and run some races, hang out with some of the trail runners down there, 'cause they're awesome. And then eat some of the food, man. Yeah. If you go down there, I'll hook you up with the right places to go eat. So,
yeah. That's always, and wherever I go, I mean, I always love, you know, the food is the main thing. We're always looking for places that are good to eat.
Yeah, man. So it's good down there, man. It's a good Cajun. I miss it.
Yeah. That sounds like fun. So, how did you do on the first 100? I mean, you said, was that a good experience? Is it something you'd,
yeah, it was, man. I train, and the good thing was I got to train on the trail. So I would have Saturdays where I would loop it twice, and mm-hmm. then so I'd get, you know, 40 miles. So I was doing ultra distances in training. I just hadn't done a race until I did the 100 miler. And so I finished in, I think it was 22:43 or something like that. And I think I want to say I was fourth or fifth place, mm-hmm. so something like that. And, but man, it got for South Louisiana, you know, I didn't know what to expect. You hear stories. And, at one point, and this is South Louisiana, we don't see snow, and I'm going through the woods, and I had a pacer for my last loop. And I said, man, am I hallucinating? I think I see snow flurries. And he's like, no, it's snow flurries. It got that cold, you know, and luckily, luckily I was dressed appropriately, but, you know, I did. On that first race, I'm talking to people, and you know, they say don't do anything that you haven't tried out, you know, for race day. Don't do anything new.
Yeah, we always say that, you know.
Yeah, and so you know what I did? I wore some tights that I had never worn before, and so I'm running through the woods. It's cold, and my quads started like cramping up, and they were hurting, and it's because they were too tight. So I figured out if I could put my thumbs in the waistband to give me some room. So I'm running through the woods with my thumb in my waistband and then until I could get around and take those things off. And I just ran in shorts in 32 degree weather. just, yeah.
Well, now in Oklahoma, probably that's kind of a normal thing now, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I'm still getting used to, man. When I get, I run early in the morning, and man, when it's kind of hard to get out there when it's, you know, 35 degrees and windy, but mm-hmm. you know, it's good. It's tough training. I have a treadmill right here, and I got to make sure that I don't overuse the treadmill and I get out and running the roads, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good. So then where did you, I mean, I take it that you've run several 100s. Where'd you go after? I mean, yeah. Did you like fall in love with that distance, or did you?
I did. I did go back and I went back and I did some 50Ks, 50 milers, you know, and just kind of like I did, I ran a marathon. Then I went back and did 5Ks, 10Ks, half marathons. Mm-hmm. And so I did the same thing and just, you know, just kind of tried to see what was out there. And it's crazy because even in 2013, I mean, there were races, but not like today. There's so much to choose from today that, you know, there's mm-hmm. a lot of races that are out. And it's really cool that we, you know, we have so much to choose from. But back then you kind of, you know, I was working and you got to kind of pick and choose. The next 100 I did was that one, the one I told you I did the relay on, the Rouge Orleans. Mm-hmm. And it was, I did the solo. It was 126.2 miles on the levee from Baton Rouge to New Orleans. And that was, and while we're running the whole thing, there's other people running relays. Mm-hmm. And that's the first one I really hallucinated on that one. That was tough. I was seeing, you know, I started on a Friday night. And
So it was a nighttime start besides.
Yeah. 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 And I could have started a later wave, but I wanted to make sure I had enough time. I didn't know. I was still learning. I didn't know mm-hmm. how my body was going to react. And this is pretty flat. I mean, it's on a levee. It was, it's super flat.
That would be rails to trail. You know,
yeah.
Same kind of thing. Yeah.
Exactly. And man, that one was hard mentally because it was so monotonous the whole way. You're just running and there's the Mississippi River's on your right. And then you run and like there's a plant, there's a boat, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just the mm-hmm. same thing for, you know, for 126.2 miles. It was tough, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And how did you do with that? I mean, that kind of being used to trails. I mean, then that's even, I think the levee or the rail to trails is even harder than regular road because you never go, it's all the same.
Yeah. And so this one was weird. So I had done some other races and, talking about, and this is kind of, this fits into the name of the podcast, just the mindset. So right before the race, my parents were there to crew me. And right before the race, I went in, there was a casino near the levee and I went in to use the restroom. And so I had on my phone, I was going to use that to be in touch with my crew to text them. Mm-hmm. I was going to, I had some music to listen to and, you know, so I had my phone, you know, like our phones, you know, we need our phones.
Uh-huh.
Well, I put it down when I went in the bathroom, to change or whatever. I put it on the toilet paper holder. And when we walked out of the casino, I was like, oh, I left my phone in there. So I went back in and it was gone.
Oh no.
Somebody stole my phone. So I had an iPad at the time for work. So I got the iPad. I fired up the iPad. I did the find my phone and it was somebody had turned it off. They stole it. Oh, so my. I'm freaking out. Like I got 126.2 miles and some of it's through Nothingsville. And so I had to,
your music is probably on your phone.
Yeah, my music and everything. And I to keep in touch with my crew. Now, at the time, my dad, of course, I had a nicer phone and all that. I'm an IT guy. My dad said, well, you can use my phone. My dad had an old funky iPhone and it didn't have anything on it. So, but, you know, I had to flip a switch and my dad was telling my mom, well, I don't know if he's going to, you know, maybe he shouldn't. He's not going to, you know, he's worried about this. And it was my work phone and stuff, too. And I just had to mentally flip a switch. Be like, okay, no, I'm here to run. Mm-hmm. I'll deal with this later. I'll deal with this when I'm done. And dad, hand me your phone. I'll use it to text you. But so I had to run that whole thing without music mm-hmm. or anything to listen to, which I've done, you know, since then. But when it's part of your plan, and let's just say I could have been, I was overheard singing on the levee and you know, just whatever, trying to entertain myself. It's probably why I hallucinated.
Yeah. Well, and that's I paced somebody, the outlaw.
Okay.
I don't know if you know Abby. Catherine Ivy is her name.
Okay.
Her trail name is Abby.
Okay. And, okay. I don't think I know her.
Yeah. I went down to pace her and she's like, well, we need to sing. And so we're going through the night and we're singing Father Abraham and,
Awesome.
And, you know, I mean, just, you know, Sunday school songs that she, yeah, she knew from Sunday school.
That's
and,
great.
I think we didn't get through, we didn't get through all the things with Father Abraham because we hit a hill. So we ran out of air.
Yeah. Right step, left step, fall down.
But yeah, that, so, but yeah, that was something that was kind of her tradition. I was like, yeah, so I got to understand that.
That's cool. Yeah. And for that one, I was just trying to keep my brain engaged, you know, and, you know, like it's just tough when you're kind of falling asleep and, you know, seeing things and all that. So,
yeah. So you did actually get into the hallucinations in the overnight.
Yeah, I saw, this was into the second night, like, actually partially during the day, like I was running down the levee and I literally ran around to get out of the way of a guy putting a big picture frame in the middle of the levee, and that guy wasn't there. and the other thing was there was a van, a flower full of flowers on the side of it. And there was a big lady wearing a flower dress, handing me flowers on the side of the trail. And she wasn't there either. It's weird, man. I don't know what, you know, like where that came from or what fed that, but that's what I experienced, you know?
Yeah. I've had friends who've had, you know, one of the guys that ran 100, ran the Hawk 100.
Okay.
He saw a monkey in the tree.
Oh, nice.
And he told his pacer, he said, there's a monkey. It's just sitting right there looking at me. He said, what? And, but I've never, I have not experienced that yet. So,
I guess it was just that, you know, that whole night of no sleep. And then the only other time I had some issues was doing Tahoe 200 because I went too long without trying to take a nap, you know. Okay. So but yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with just you're kind of dreaming awake, you know, if you get real tired, real sleepy. That's what it is for me anyway.
Yeah. So you mentioned Tahoe 200. So what was the difference in going into doing the 200? You know, what was your kind of your motivation there?
Man, so I guess when I first heard of it coming out, I remember Candace posting it, and you know, that was before anybody really knew who Candace was. And I remember her posting it and I was like, man, that would be awesome. But then the price was like $900. And, you know, and I remember saying that, like, yeah, it's too pricey for me. And she said, well, it costs a lot to put it on. They have, you know, she kind of did an explanation about the aid stations and all. And I'm like, oh, I understand. I just don't have it, you know, to run it. But, later on I was able to, in 2018, I was just able to plan for it and to sign up for it. And so, man, the logistics are so much, logistics are tough for it because especially your first one, well, I guess even my second one too, cause I didn't plan really well for those, but anyway, but for the first one, like you don't know, like you can have a planned pace, but you really don't know how your body's going to respond and how often you're going to need to take a nap. And if you have drop bags, you know, like, you know, am I going to hit this one? You can have a 5 to 10 hour variable on when you're going to hit a certain aid station or even more later on, you know, depending on if you have a tough time. So, you know, where do you pack your warm clothes for at night? Where do you put your battery chargers? Where do you put, you know, certain food and stuff? It was tough. And so luckily my wife came and I was able to see her at certain points. So I knew at those points I could always have some things, you know, that were with her, kind of my roaming drop bag, but I still had to, you know, other drop bags where she couldn't be. And so it was a really tough, and then to train for it, you know, I kind of looked into getting a coach at the time, but I was to be able to go to the race, I couldn't really afford to get somebody. And so I trained kind of like I would do for 100, but some extra miles. It, did some weight training, a lot of squats, and you know, here it is pretty flat in Oklahoma, so it's hard to get some, you know, up and down training. So you know, doing some stair steppers and, you know, hill repeats where I can find hills, and, you know, just doing what I could to try to prepare myself, because, you know, I just didn't know, you know.
Right.
And then we're at Tahoe in particular, when, like, we did the medical check-in, my resting heart rate was about 10 beats more than usual. And so I remember looking at the, the lady, and her name was Angel, and I said, my heart rate's usually a lot lower. She said, well, yeah, it's the altitude. I mean, we were about 7,000 feet to start.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I think that's what it was for Tahoe. I think, yeah, it's about what it starts at. And so, and then you do that and you go up. And so There's some altitude too. And mm-hmm. I felt it going up. I was like, oh, it's going to be a long 205 miles, but luckily I was able to settle in my body, responded. And, mm-hmm. But you know, when you do a race like that in the mountains during the day, I mean, we had some spots where I ran out of water. I had to filter some out of a stream and it got really hot. And then at night it got pretty cold, And so you gotta try to plan for what you're carrying and all that. And, so it was tough. And I didn't plan for sleep well enough, and I got to where I was, wasting a lot of time falling asleep while I was, I would say running, but I was walking, mm-hmm. just stumbling around when I should have at some of the sleep stations planned a good half an hour to an hour nap. I would have been way more efficient, and I'd have probably finished faster than I did. I was pleased with what I did, but I could have shaved off a lot of time if I'd have been proactive with my rest.
Yeah. So I just dropped my phone. So what is the difference in the, from somebody who's run 100 mile, what does it take besides the logistics and what does it take mentally to get that 200 mile, what's the difference in the dynamics of what it takes to actually push yourself to do that?
Yeah. So mentally, in 100 mile, most of them, your aid stations are, sometimes, 5-10 miles apart. Well, here they're about 20 miles apart, and roughly some of them are closer, some of them are a little further, but, you have got to just stay in the moment and not think of how many miles you've got left, because that would drive you nuts. So if I felt myself drifting to, you at mile 40 and you're like, wow, I just ran 40 miles. I got 165 left to go. Mm-hmm. That'll mess with your head, mm-hmm. when you've never gone that far before. And so you just really got to stay in the moment and focus on where you are and, enjoy the experience. And my focus was always trying to get to the next aid station. Mm-hmm. And one thing I did, I guess, this is my background we hadn't talked about while we're on here, but, as a former pastor and a Christian, one thing that I did is every 10 miles, I wouldn't necessarily stop, but I would just thank the Lord, thank God that I could be out there and just mm-hmm. say a little prayer of thanks. And sometimes I would stop if it was at night and it was pretty. It was kind of funny because sometimes you just get in the zone and I would, kick a rock or something and be like, oh no. And I'd look down and I had missed my 10 miles. It had been like 11 miles. I was like, oh, I got to thank God.
God reminding you.
Yeah, he reminded me.
That's good.
And that really helped me, because, we can get, it just helped every 10 miles. I was kind of refocusing myself and thankful that I got to be there, because, we can get focused on what's hurting and being down and get in that dark place, that mm-hmm. low valley. But if we focus on the positive and people on my podcast have heard me say this plenty of times, but I always, for races, I make myself, even if I'm feeling like garbage, when I get into an aid station, I always ask them how they're doing. I always make sure I thank them for being there. And even if I don't feel good, I smile mm-hmm. because I am grateful for them. We all know the volunteers, they take a lot of time. And when we do it, it takes time and energy. And so just expressing that gratitude, that helps keep my mind in the right place. I just they deserve thanks. So
yeah,
it's good.
Yeah. Well, and that is, I learned that, from church as well, the whole thing of one of the being grateful and the, and the gratitude for life and gratitude toward God. But I think that's even a more of a universal principle, because there are people who are outside of the church mm-hmm. that, they talk about gratitude journals, and there's a real power in that. There's something about us that we're made that if we plug into being grateful for, you know, there's a real power in that, that can keep you centered and actually, you know, get you out of some of the, you know, even some of the physical things that are happening to you. If you can be grateful for what you have, there's a real power in that to be able to deal with the things that are going wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, like we talked about the book Born to Run that I read. And if you remember, I've reread it. And one of the things Christopher McDougall kind of explores in there is the, you know, the Tarawara people probably totally mispronounced that, but oh, it's okay. But you know, those fast running people in Mexico, but they were a happy people. They were mm-hmm. smile and they were grateful. And, you know, when I look at other ultra runners who are doing amazing, you know, a lot of them, you know, your Courtney DeWalter. I mean, I got to meet her at the Tahoe 200 and, you know, she's the sweetest, nicest person. She's thankful. You know, she's a happy, she enjoys getting to run. And Camille Heron, she's from Oklahoma. I got to meet her a few times. I've had her on the podcast and she's competitive and all, but she's a happy person, you know? And mm-hmm. so there's something there, you know, about just, we run more, we're more efficient all the way around when we're positive and happy. And so I think, you know, from a Christian perspective, I think God's put that in us. And, you know, fear is the enemy. And when we live, you know, fearful and down and we don't function real well, but when we're happy and when we're focusing on what's good and what's right, and, we do a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things that I have found is that is a choice. I mean, the people who have the gratitude journals, I mean, we have the free will to choose
yeah.
what we think and where we position ourselves.
Yeah.
And position yourself with gratitude is a choice that you can make. I mean, even doesn't matter what's going on, you can still find something to be grateful for.
Yeah. And sometimes it's work. Sometimes you got to really think, cause when, you know, especially when, you know, when things are really bad, but you can, you know, you can find it, you've got something to be thankful for. And, stinking thinking will equal a DNF in the race. Well, and in life.
Yeah. And when I've said this to a lot of people is that, Napoleon Hill was one who said it in Think and Grow Rich, And he said it in other contexts too, is that the greatest gift God has given us is the ability to choose our thoughts, to choose what we think. And so, you know, I land really hard on the side of free will, and God has given us that ability to choose. Yeah. And that is, I know that there's, you know, God's will as well. I mean, there's both, but yeah, that he is, within who he is, he's given us that freedom to choose what we think and the choices that we make, and gratitude is a big part of that. So, exactly. So yeah, it's there's real power in that.
I agree. So, you know, yeah.
Yeah. So what else did you learn in the 200 miles?
Yeah, man, I guess one of the things I learned, about myself. After 100 mile, you can be pretty raw emotionally. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you're stripping away, you know, everything, you know, except what, one foot in front of the other, you know, mm-hmm. one foot in front of the other, Cliff Bar, drink, whatever, you know, just trying to survive, you know. And it was kind of exponential, you know, because when I got to 100 miles, I was thinking, wow, you know, I got 100 more to go, you know. Yeah.
And luckily, you've been there before, but yeah, then you've got another 100 to do. Yeah,
exactly. And then I wasn't feeling exactly peachy, you know. And so there was an aid station at that point, and I remember thinking, wow, gotta, you know, and I shared this before, and it's just kind of funny. I believe that was the aid station where I looked at my wife and I was packing, getting ready to leave again. And I looked at her and I started laughing. I said, "This is stupid." And she said, "Yeah, I agree. It's stupid." I was like, "All right, see later." You know, it's like, I'm out.
Yeah.
And then ran out into the darkness, you know, my highs were high, and I hit some lows, you know, mm-hmm. I did hit some lows out there. but I was never, I just learned a lot about what I had in me. I don't get super emotional at the end of races, like I have that when I finish 100 or whatever. And I, you know, even when I worked hard for it, I'm like, all right, you know, good. I got it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, excitement. But man, when I got to the end of that 200, when I heard the finish line, I heard it before I saw it, man, I felt it well up in my throat. And I was like, hold on, you're not there yet, you know? And, yeah. You know, man, when I crossed it, I had tears, and it was an emotional experience, and it was good though. It was, I just ran 205 miles and, I did it. I'm, you know, from the flatlands of Oklahoma and Louisiana, I was able to train. I was able to come out here and, you know, I placed 17th, 72 hours and 40 something minutes. And, and I got it done, you know, and respectable. And I was like, you know, all right, you know, and just thank you, Lord, you know, thank you that I did it. And I survived and, got a few blisters. I'm going to be hurting a little while, but you know, I did it, you know? So it was just kind of like that so grateful, you know, that I got there, that I got to the finish line and I finished. I learned that there's more in me that God's put in me, than I realized. Mm-hmm. So one of my big takeaways internally, you know? Yeah.
So did you find that you had to dig deeper into yourself for the 200 than you would for the hundreds? Was that a deeper like push when you had to keep yourself going, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. There was, cause you know, it's kind of like, you know, you hit high highs and low lows, and those lows were, you know, some of them were pretty low. And I got really tired, and you know, and I had to do a really good job of managing my resources. You know, at the aid stations, it wasn't eating, you know, chips and M&Ms. I was eating cheeseburgers. You know, at just about every aid station, I ate a cheeseburger. But so that helped a lot of the lows. You know, calorie deprived and stuff. So I would take time at the aid stations and eat them. And eat more, and eat good. But emotionally, yeah, I just had to will myself to keep moving. And part of it is, you know, I had to remind myself because it's something that I wanted to do and I was finally getting to do it. And so I was like, okay. And not to keep on the thankfulness, but I had to keep remind myself, no, I get to be here and this suffering is teaching me. And so, you know, I had to just use those things and usually when I would get kind of low and I'd hit about a 10 mile mark and it was time to thank God that I get to be out there, you know, and sometimes I didn't really feel thankful, but you know, I faked it till I made it, you know, fake it till you make it. But yeah. And so you just, you've got to have, it did take mental strength, not only for problem solving and figuring things out and trying to feel where my body was. I just had to dig deep and just keep moving, you know, keep moving. And it got to, sometimes it was that's all I could think is one foot in front of the other. That's all I could do. It's all I could, you know, I wasn't thinking about anything else, you know, just move, you know?
Yeah. Well, and then I know, and from listening to you, you had planned on doing the Triple Crown of 200s this year.
Yeah, man. And so this is kind of cool. So I couldn't get away from it. Like I could not get away from the Triple Crown and I was like kind of obsessed with it. And my wife didn't even realize how much. And I was like, golly, what is this? And so, hey, you know, we're talking about church stuff and this is just what happened. I was like, I prayed one night. I was like, all right, this is ridiculous. God, if you want me to do this, you're going to have to, you know, cause I know I can make crazy plans. But if you want me to do this, you're going to have to show me that, you know, that you want me to do this. The next day I had shared with somebody, with a few people that I wanted to do it or whatever. And not a whole lot, you know, the next day I get a message while I'm at work from a friend on, Facebook Messenger that, hey, we know you want to do this. We'll pay your entry fees for all three races.
Oh, wow. That's a great That's a great gift.
I was like, and I was just like, you know, we believe in what you're doing and we want you to be able to do it. And so, and I was just like, you know, my jaws on my desk. You're like, okay, God, I guess I'm, you know, I told my wife, I was like, hey, I'm doing the Triple Crown. You know, I know we still got to get there and, you know, flights and all that stuff, but God's got it figured out. And so I was like, well, guess I'm doing it. And so we planned to do it. And there was a few of us from here in Oklahoma that were going to do it. Christine Fisher and Jeremy Harrison, who's one of the race directors for Outlaw. We were all three going to do it this past year. And so, you know, we were planning and talking and trying to do some of the same training races, but then COVID.
Yes.
You know, I was able to defer, Bigfoot and Tahoe to next year. And then, I tried to run Moab this year and then, but I'll be adding Moab. So I'm still planning on doing the Triple Crown next year.
Okay.
And then, I guess, yeah, we should talk about Moab because we need,
yeah. And I enjoyed listening to what you had to say about Moab, but I thought I wanted to have you share it with my audience as well. And maybe ask you some other questions. Now, Isla writes and says, be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
God will provide it for you if you ask for it.
That's true. It's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So you ran the Moab 240 this year.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I figured, looking at the landscape of races Utah was having some races in that area. And so I figured I would be able to hang on to it. And that way I could go out and experience Moab. And so I said, well, you know, I'm going to stick with my plan and do it. And then I'll just, you know, next year I'll do it again with the Triple Crown. And, you know, with the races being so, you know, few and far between, I figured if it stayed, I'd be in, you know, I was looking forward to it.
Well, yeah.
You know,
if they hold it, that would.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
there's nobody, no other races we're going on.
Exactly.
For this year.
And I had never been to Utah. So, you know, it was kind of it'd be a neat, you know, neat field trip and go to Utah and, you know, run in the desert.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I trained, I felt ready. I felt good. Even, you know, when Jen saw me, earlier in the day, I was feeling great. I was doing really well. The temperature, I believe, was, 13 to 15 degrees hotter than normal for the race.
Okay.
During the day. And, it's exposed. I mean, you're just out there in the desert.
There's no trees out there.
Yeah, man. I had my, you know, here I've been running in, you know, cool weather and stuff. And, so I have my flappy hat, my desert hat. Mm-hmm. And, but everybody was suffering. There was a whole bunch of us out there suffering in the heat. My big issue, as you heard on the podcast, was the electrolyte mix that they were using. I tested it. I bought some and I tested it a couple of times here running in the cool weather for my long runs, and it worked great. It had a little funky aftertaste, but no big deal. It was good. I can deal with that. Well, when it got really hot, I started throwing up when I drank it. I couldn't keep anything down. And the problem was I had just left the last water station that was a mile behind me, and I had 19 miles to go. And I had a 2-liter bladder full of that electrolyte mix. And all I had was one little, 500 milliliters of water. Mm-hmm. And so what I should have done, hindsight's 2020, I should have ran a mile back, dumped out all that electrolyte mix and refilled it with water, and then took off, because I'd have been able to keep myself hydrated. What I did was, I guess it could have worked. I said, well, you know, I'm just going to sip on this in small doses on this electrolyte mix. And hopefully it'll stay down. Mm-hmm. And so I just started sipping on it a little bit, and I said, okay, it's working. And then it all came back up. I started throwing up again. And, it was just a fight to try to keep, hydrated. And then when you're dehydrated, you can't keep any calories down. And, it was tough. I ended up in a really low place. I had 8 miles to go. It was dark. A guy came by and said, man, are you all right? And, I told him, I wish I knew who this guy was. If he's listening anywhere, you know, because I want to thank him. But he checked on me. I said, look, man, we had our spot trackers on and I was number 38. And I said, you tell them at the next aid station, if number 38 quits moving, y'all come get me. I said, I'm dehydrated. I'm in bad shape. And so he started to leave and then he came back and he said, well, I need that electrolyte mix. I'm out of calories. He said, and if so, he had some extra water. So he poured his water and refilled my little handheld. And I was able to squirt a bunch of my electrolyte mix into his bottle. Mm-hmm. And so I filled about 3/4 of the way filled up my bottle again. But because of that, I was able to make it to the next aid station. Mm-hmm. And I thought, man, if I can make it to the next aid station, I can get some calories down. I can, you know, regroup, keep some fluids down. And when I got there, I sat there for over an hour, drinking chicken broth, ate a quesadilla and just drinking a lot of water. And I thought I was good. I dumped that stuff out of my bladder pack, filled it with water and took off into the dark because this, even if I would have dropped at this aid station, like this is in the middle of nowhere, is Breaking Bad aid station. I don't know how you got out there, you know? But I took off and then about 2 miles from there, I started throwing up again. My stomach still hadn't reset. Hmm. So I threw up all the calories I had had. And by the time I got to my wife at mile 72 or 73, I was in bad shape. And she's used to seeing me even when I'm at a low, I'm usually kind of problem solving, you know, okay, hey, mm-hmm. I need some of this. I need this, you know, and I'm ready to move forward. But I was pale. It's an ultra running podcast, but I think I peed at about 11 o'clock Saturday, Friday morning. And I didn't pee again until like Saturday morning, you know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was bad.
While you're on the trail or is this?
It ended up being after, when I was at the last with the aid station where I ended up dropping. Uh-huh. Before we left, I ended up peeing one more, you know, but that was Saturday morning. So I was in pretty bad shape. And, Mike McKnight, who won the Triple Crown, last year, he won all three races and the triple last year. He was the aid station captain at that last aid station when I met my wife. And so he came and was trying to help and, you know, was bringing me some chicken broth and said, what if I bring mm-hmm. you, you know, roasted potato, you know, you try all those.
Yeah. You're trying to keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. Trying to see if I could keep some stuff down, you know, if I can get calories in me and keep some water, you know, fluids down. Excuse me. I can, you know, I can keep going. And so I tried and, man, I kept, I, just when I think I was okay, I'd start throwing it up. You know, it's at one point I just, you know, my wife said, you know, I really don't think, you know, you should continue. And, you know, I guess I could, I was ahead of cutoffs. And I could have sat there longer maybe. But mm-hmm. at that point, I was just so spent, you know, my brain was, you know, I was gone. I really don't know if I could have climbed out of that, you know, with the time I had left. Mm-hmm. And so we actually told them where I was dropping, turned in the spot tracker, then decided to try one other thing. Somebody had some liquid IV. And so she went back and got it and I tried it and that was stuff. I guess I mixed it too strong. I don't know, but it made me throw up again. So I was like, okay, we're done. You know, so, you know, and it was tough because, you know, man, we drove all the way out there, a lot of mm-hmm. resources, time, you know, energy, money. And it was tough. It was really hard because other than my stomach, I felt good. You know, like mm-hmm. When I was running, I felt good. I felt comfortable until my stomach went south, you know. You know, in fact, after the week after we got back, I had the Oklahoma City Marathon that went virtual. You know, we got back and, you know, once I got fluids in me and felt good at one Thursday afternoon, I went and run a marathon, you know, just in my neighborhood, you know. So, you know, I was there physically. So it was just tough. I had a pity party. Like I really did. I got, mm-hmm. I've had a few DNFs. I don't like DNFing, man. I, you know, I don't like it. And so, but that being down kind of, I guess, as I started becoming my, like the, by that Saturday evening, I was kind of starting to feel myself again, you know, getting fluids in me, eating and rested a little while. And, that pity party started turning to like this fire in me, man. Like, okay, I'm not doing this again. I'll be back next year. And, man, I started making like plans in my head. A good friend of mine, Cliff Pittman, who coaches people, and I coach a few runners. And so, I told him, and I was like, all right, I want you coaching me next year for this Triple Crown. And so I want you to make sure I'm doing everything right. And it's kind of funny. And somebody said, well, yeah, but you're coaching other people. And it's like, yeah, but even coaches need a coach, you know? And so I can look out for my guys and I can do what my coach tells me to do. It frees me up to do that. And so I messaged him, he was messaging him, checking on me. And I told him, I was like, all right, here's the plan. I want you to coach me for next year. And man, we've started, and he's got me doing some hard stuff, but my body's responding to it. And I'm pumped. I'm ready. I'm excited. I've got a race, not this weekend, but next, 50K. It's one of Jeremy's races, one of the Outlaw series, the Thunderbird.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm doing the 50K there. And I don't know if he's going to have me race it or not, or just run it. But my first A race, I'm going to do the Love It 100 in Arkansas.
Okay.
It's a tough race. And then I start building up for the Triple Crown, and I've got races lined up, some 50 milers leading up to the Triple Crown. And so we can't stay down, and sometimes we fail when you try hard things. You run 240 miles in the desert, there's always a chance. You run 100 miles, you run a 50 mile, there's always a chance you're going to fail. And if you do, at least you tried,
Yeah.
You gave it a shot, but learn from it,
the possibility of failure and the likelihood of failure being so high is what makes it enticing.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's, people who talk about the Barclay marathons.
Yeah. I think those people just like to hurt, man.
Yeah. but there's something about, the pushing yourself and testing your limits, basically testing your limits.
Yeah.
Yeah. So have you ever had any issues with your nutrition or your hydration before?
I've had a little bit, I've had a few things, happen, but I never that bad. Never that bad. And see, what's crazy is, going through your racing, like one nutrition that worked for you for a while will end up not working for you at some point, and I've heard of other people, same thing. I was a Tailwind guy. I love that stuff, man. And I wish I could still drink it. The last time I did Tailwind for a race was the Tahoe 200. They had it at all the aid stations. And by the end of the Tahoe 200, I couldn't stomach this stuff anymore because I drank so much of it. And so I tried it again recently. And this, it was great for fuel for me. I loved it because I'm trickling fuel and electrolytes, and then I can eat other stuff at the same time. But I can't. It makes me sick now. The sweetness. And so I, tried other things, and I'm in the process right now of, I want to make sure that next year when I go into the Triple Crown, that I have tested everything that I'm using to the fullest in the heat, in the cold, up a hill, down a hill, I don't know, whatever, but make sure it works for me.
Yeah. And that's hard. You don't know those things until you get there. The 100 that I did that, I got 50 miles in, and nothing that I had planned on eating agreed with me. I mean, it just couldn't. And then I did the, Pumpkin Holler, and I got past 50 miles and I had no saliva. I couldn't chew anything. So wow. It was like, bacon sounded good, but it felt like sand in my mouth. And yeah. Hamburger. I mean, I couldn't get food down. And so I was having to get, my wife finally handed me a beer. She says, here, the monks called this liquid bread.
Calories, whatever.
It was calories. But, so it's difficult when, your body, you never know how your body's going to react on that day. Yeah. And so the nutrition is a big part of the unknowns that are there.
Yeah.
And so yeah, and testing, that's hard. I mean, you got to get Isla says she's used Hammer Nutrition and it stopped liking liking her, and she's switched to Tailwind. So yeah, it's
cool. Hammers. I tried some of the Hammer stuff and it didn't agree with me, you know, so you just gotta, you gotta try. And luckily we've got a lot of stuff out there now.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, so were you at Pumpkin Holler this past year?
I DNF'd at the Hawk 100. We had rainstorm, we had a thunderstorm in the middle of the night.
Oh man.
And by the next morning, the trails, I was on pace, but yeah. I missed the cut because the trails were so slick. It was just, I couldn't, just standing still, it fell down.
Oh, wow.
So then my running friends enabled me and said, hey, you know, here's Pumpkin Holler just a month later. why don't you go down there? So yes, I was down there.
Nice. That's a good race. And, I tell people it's a good, I think it's a good one for I did the 50K 2015 or 14. And then I did the 100, last year. And, it's a lot of aid stations, and they put on by good people. So it's a good, aid stations are close. It's a good first 100 for that. They got some pretty strong uphills, but
Yeah. And it's, I like they said, it's mostly flat. And it's there weren't very many flat places there, but the hills did not bother me. The road was I wanted an uphill so I could, I wanted rocks. I wanted to have rocks and roots to step over. And that was what wore me down, was the fact that it was the same, I didn't have to change my pace or my step, for the whole 30 hours I was out there.
Yeah. So, it's a good one, but it's what you like too. Like I enjoy though being out in the woods,
Yes. And I like the woods as well.
Yeah. And so it's just a different flavor, but it's a good people, good race. Just,
yeah. Yeah. I enjoyed it. I liked it. It was, and I would say, not say never, but a gravel road's not. I much prefer trails.
So, yeah. Dirt is more friendly.
Yeah. Yeah. I've thought, I've kicked around the idea of, maybe 200, maybe I could do a 200 sometime, but I know that would be a whole, there's a lot more things to think about.
So I would tell you this about the 200, like when I did the Tahoe, Jamil Corey, Jam, who puts on Aravaipa races, he was running there, and I was running with him a little bit. And I remember him talking to somebody else, and you do a lot of power hiking on a 200, you're not just running unless you're like Courtney DeWalter or something. You're doing a lot of power hiking, and really, if you can get a consistent power hike, you can finish within a cutoff. So it's a good, if you just plan it well and keep a steady pace and plan your rest, those 200s are very doable, and you don't have to be a super fast or anything like that. You just, that'd be tough.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one of the things I when I was training for my 100, I mean, I knew I was not going to be competitive. My goal was to finish.
Yeah.
And so I spent a lot of time, and probably half of my training time was on power hiking, even for the 100. And which helped me in the Pumpkin Holler. I had an injury to my foot at about 58 miles in, and I couldn't run. And so I ended up, I had to walk. And even walking, I had this pain in my foot about every mile or so.
Yeah.
And for about 10, and then the last 30 miles, I was able to walk in a consistent basis, but yeah, it was like, I still couldn't run.
Yeah. Well, so, that's tough. You just have to make the choice and, mentally that, okay, I'm just going to hoof it, I'm just going to keep moving forward,
Yeah. Yeah. And we, my pacer finally, realized him. When we started the last loop, it was funny because I'd been walking slower just because I was nursing my foot.
Yeah.
And then he realized that I hadn't been having this pain. So when we hit that aid station for the last loop, he's, He didn't say let's go faster. He just took off. And so we were doing about 15 minute miles for the next 10, yeah. Just on a pretty consistent basis, just a good fast walk. And,
what a pacer should do, get you there.
Yeah. It was good. It was fun. Well, so next year is your, Triple Crown.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Unless, 2022 or 2021 looks like 2020. That's the plan, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think race directors have kind of gotten a little bit, even if we still have some of that to deal with, I think the race directors have been able to make some adjustments. And the only difference, I think the only problem I think has been that some of them have run into is the venues will not allow that kind of.
Yeah. And, it's been good. A lot of them, I did the Silver Heels 100, in Colorado, and, they were able to, staggered starts, wear your mask at the aid stations, and it went well, and those that have been able to do it and put on the races, some of the Outlaw series, they just smart with it. And as long as, like you said, as long as they can get their permits, I think we can continue to race smart, especially trail running, man. When we're all out spread out, and, it's like we're in the middle of nothing,
Yeah. Well, and then most of the from what's been learned since the first started talking about it, is you have to have, just passing someone on the trail usually there's a very, very low risk for just that type of, that you have to be in contact with someone for a longer period of time in an enclosed space to really is where the high risk is. So
exactly. Yeah. Spending like 15 minutes with them close space is what the CDC says. So, I mean, we're in open space and we're just doing our thing.
Well, most of the single track, none of us want to get too far off in the woods to pass by somebody. Yeah. So yeah. In our neck of the woods, the mountain bikes come on you so fast, you don't have time to get out of the way. Yeah. So, yeah, they'll pass by pretty close. Some of them, but, well, tell a little bit. I mean, tell a little bit about your podcast. I mean, I want to I know you have a podcast. You've been I can't remember what episode you're on, but weekly podcast.
I think 54, maybe 53 or 54 will come out Saturday. Okay. Yeah, I the reason I started it was I just wanted to visit with people and kind of, talk about ultra running. And there was always, when I listened to podcasts, there were questions that I wanted to ask and I couldn't ask. And so I was like, well, I want to start doing this. It's just something that I kind of made a decision, prayed about it and started it up and figured out what I needed to do. Technically, I'm an IT guy. So I figured out what I need. And just started interviewing people, and kind of figuring it out as I went along, and it's been fun. I was surprised that one of my first few episodes, Sally McCray, who's, an elite, she's very positive. She's a Christian. She's awesome. And, I asked her to be on my podcast and she's like, yeah, whatever. And like, nobody knows, whatever. It's just, I've had some, Mars Ulrich and some other, kind of big names, but some of the funnest ones have been people that I've met at races who just have a cool story and that'd be fun to interview and just hear about their life and their training. And, I've learned so much by asking people, what they do in their training. And I've also it's just fun to hear about people's lives and how they got into ultra running. I like hearing the story of what got them there, and, some people it's they just kind of fell into it, but some people they've got some deep, things that they've, from addictions, and a lot of them, they get out of being addicted to drugs and alcohol to being addicted to running. So it's much better, but it's funny. I've made so many friends along the way doing it. And hopefully, and it's my heart, and the other reason I decided to do it was just to be an encouragement to people. I say this, you've probably heard me say it on the podcast. So many people say I could never run 100 miles, and I'll tell them, you know, you could, you just got to put the work in. You just got to do it. You don't want it. Don't sell yourself short. And,
So, and, Isla says, what's the name of the podcast? It's called Run the Riot podcast. Take off on David's last name, Terrio. spelled the Riot. It's on iTunes. I listen. I have an Android, so I've got to find one of the other one of the other apps. But iTunes is where it all.
It should be just about anywhere you listen to the podcast. I mean, I have it where it, you know, pushed it to Stitcher and all those other programs, so they should be out there.
I was going to ask you about. I started talking about the I had this question in my mind.
I always tell that brain's there.
Well, that's good. Well, thank you so much, David. I appreciate you. Appreciate you taking time to be here.
Oh, thanks for having me,
Eric. Enjoy this venue hope to, I almost had it. It was something about what you were talking about. It'll come to you, man, I'm sure, after I end the broadcast and
laying down in bed and be like, oh man.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you being here. The Run the Riot podcast, if you're listening to this on replay, it's great. You've got some great guests, and I always enjoy what your perspective, what you have to say. So
thank you so much, Eric. I appreciate it.
And enjoyed talking with you. And hopefully, I mean, you're not too far away, and I've run some races. Now, are you going to be an outlaw this year?
I don't know, because the problem with outlaw is I got married on Valentine's Day, and outlaw always on Valentine's Day.
It's always right around that time. Yeah,
it's like, man, I want to cover your race, but my wife is just not.
She's like, that's not her idea of an anniversary celebration, is
it? Exactly. And so anyway, I have to work on it. This year, I won't. I won't be able to do it because I'm doing the Love It about a week after. But
okay.
But anyway, I'd like to do it. I want to get out there. I love Jeremy and all that they do. Their races are awesome, and I'd love to get out there and run it. Okay.
I know a lady that she helped me. She was one of the pacers last year. She's doing the 100. She and I didn't know Abby at all. And she lives in Topeka. I live in Kansas City. We drove down there and met Abby to pace for her, just through Facebook. And then Troy Pruitt, it's on his list to do, and he kind of mentioned that he might want me to pace for him. So I may be down there pacing again.
Yeah, man, so, it'd be awesome if you.
Yeah. But it's a tough course. It's so I wondered if that was in your, but if not, so hopefully I'd get to see you at some event. Soon.
I do some around Arkansas, and you know, who knows, you know, I'm sure we'll cross paths at some point.
Yeah. And if you ever get up to Kansas City, look me up. I'd be glad to take you for some barbecue.
Hey, that'll work.
So thanks again, David, and I appreciate it. And for those of you who are watching this on Facebook Live, Isla, good to see you here. Thanks for watching this live. If you're watching this on replay, you message me if you have any comments that you want to make. Send me a message through Messenger. Glad to talk with you. Thanks again. We'll see you next time. Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and review. And don't forget to subscribe. That way you won't miss out on any new episodes. If you'd like to contact me, you can find me on Facebook as @UltramarathonMindset, or you can find me on the web at theultramarathonmindset.com. Remember, your mindset is the key to success in running and in life, and developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Hey, thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time.